the mom.
And I'm Dr. Barr, the doc, and this is Mom and Doc Talks, where we talk about all things that go into healing pans and pandas with a special focus on homeopathy. In our last episode, Jody took us through her experience of chasing a diagnosis and all of the various specialists that she had to see. In this episode, we're going to really dive into what it took to get a diagnosis. Jody's going to share some of her experience, and I'm going to go over some of the diagnostic criteria and testing that might be done to help actually get a loose diagnosis. And one of the things that I think we should talk about first and foremost, Jody mentioned the term clinical diagnosis in our last episode, and that's a really important phrase because the reality is there is no like hard and fast verifiable way to say this is definitely PANS, this is definitely PANDAS. It is a clinical diagnosis, which means that what we're looking at is the collection of symptoms that somebody's experiencing and some evidence that can back up or support that this might be what's occurring. But there's no like marker that this says you definitely have PANS or PANDAS. And unfortunately, there is some misperception in the community that if you get this thing, it will tell you for sure. And Jody sort of touched on that specifically with the Cunningham panel that she was hoping was going to be the clincher, or the swab of the nasal swab that showed strep, or the various different times that you found strep at different points in your journey, that those, or the titers, that was going to be like the deal, like clincher. This is definitely PANS or PANDAS, and that's just not the case. So Jody, why don't you start us off by talking a little bit about how you actually ended up getting to that specialist and what that specialist did with you to give you the diagnosis. And let's talk a little bit about what sort of difference that made for you in your life with actually getting a diagnosis and some of the misdiagnoses that were brought to your attention to or suggested to you.
Yeah.
So, a whole lot to talk about, basically. Let's just dive in.
Yeah. I think after we had the positive Cunningham and the immunologist was like, okay, like maybe yes, maybe no. I was like, all right, we're good. Let's what's my next step here? Like, what do I do next? I'm not ready to do IVIG, which was what the immunologist was there for. What else do I do? What are other parents doing? Going back to the community and finding local, it was a five-hour drive to get to this PANS specialist. Scheduled it and took Avery, and man, it was really nice because we went there with all of the blood work that we had, the Cunningham panel. And more than anything, it was like, let's talk
about... But wasn't the specialist who ran the Cunningham panel?
Huh?
It wasn't the PAN specialist that ran the Cunningham
panel?
No,
it was the immunologist that we saw before.
Okay.
But this was a cool thing. Once we got to the specialist, I sort of kind of like, I knew back when we did the Cunningham panel, the immunologist didn't want to do the Cunningham panel, but I showed up with it on a day that I knew we were going to do blood work. So I was able to like get that to happen earlier. Anyways, we got to the specialist, and, more than anything else, it was like, just talk to me about what's going on. Like, tell me what's happening in your house. Explaining all that to him. And he's like, absolutely. He's like, it definitely sounds like she's got PANDAS. He said, you know, I've been treating this thing for almost 30 years now. This is not a brand new thing. He's like, unfortunately, it's just not well recognized by the medical community. And he's like, here's what we can do. And he had this whole action plan, these different things that I could try. And not only that, he's like, well, let me talk to you about some other testing that I do with my patients that you haven't done yet that might help us figure out what we're treating or figure out what the best course of action. But here's this little chunk of things that we can start trying first. So that was like so validating and felt so good to me to know what it was and to have this provider that was like, okay, I got a little plan for you and we're just going to start working through it. It was like, oh my gosh, we finally have something to do here. Mm-hmm. So it was nice.
Yeah. So let's go ahead and explain what the Cunningham panel is. The Cunningham panel is, it's actually a specialty lab. It's not covered by insurance as of this, the time of recording here. And so it's looking for antibodies to certain proteins and receptors in the brain, five different antibodies that it's looking for. And so it is suggestive that there is an autoimmune process occurring in the brain when these are positive, but it is not diagnostic of PANS or PANDAS. And in general, it doesn't change treatment recommendations. And so it gets a lot of attention because it's actually looking for something that's going on, an autoimmune process in the brain. But again, it's not really going to direct or change treatment for people. And that was your experience, right, Jody, that like you got this, you were hoping it was going to be like the answer. And what did it lead to for you?
You know what my main, and this is crazy because I just in the last episode said that I was like a hard no with IVIG. I think part of it was me like wanting to secure the diagnosis, like finally have the diagnosis, but also like if Avery were to ever get so bad that we needed IVIG, I was being told at the time that having a positive Cunningham panel would help you get insurance to cover IVIG. So part of it was wanting the official diagnosis. And then part of it was like possibly needing it down the road. We need to test her right now when she's at like what I thought was going to be her worst.
Mm-hmm. Got it. So. Okay. So by the time you'd gotten to this PANDAS specialist, you basically already done all of the testing that would generally be done. So I'll touch a little bit on some of the testing and like the diagnostic criteria for PANS or PANDAS. So what we're looking for, and I touched on this briefly in our episode where we describe what PANS is that temporal relationship with an infection. And so for PANS in general, we're not necessarily looking for a specific infection. We're looking for acute onset of OCD and ARFID, or avoidant restrictive food intake disorder, and behavioral changes that are not better explained by something else occurring in the body. With PANDAS, we want to have some suggestion that it is closely related to a strep infection. So ideally you'll get a throat swab and it'll come back positive either on the rapid strep or on the culture. In the absence of that, because you know maybe the infection is already cleared, you're looking for titers. And we talked about this on a previous episode, ASO and anti-DNA speed titers are the ones that you're mostly looking for. And those were the titers that Jody mentioned in our last episode that had been run to give suggestions that there were strep infections that had previously existed, even if there wasn't one that was active currently that could explain the onset of symptoms. So we're wanting to see those elevated. Ideally, both are going to be elevated, or one is going to be incredibly elevated if not both are elevated. So that's generally what we're looking for, is like that collection of symptoms that we talked about in that first or that second episode that we did in episode 2 about PANS and PANDAS and what it is. Plus a relationship with the with an infection that is not better explained by another condition. So that's basically what we're looking for to get a diagnosis. I think that was
part of my frustration too, is number one, we would go in and we would do swabs and the swabs were always negative, like almost every single time. And then we would do titers and I'm like we have elevated titers, like this is it, but the elevated titers were just telling us that she had right.
Those are only really, really useful if you've never had strep, as far as you know. If you've never had strep, but you have elevated titers, it's a lot more suggestive than if you've known you had strep and the titers are elevated, because yes, it will just tell you that you've had a past infection. And that's one of the challenges with some of these tests, is it just tells us that you have had it. It doesn't say this definitely caused this.
Yeah.
So what else did it help in any way with some of the school stuff? Cause I know she was having progressive challenges with school. Once you got a diagnosis, did it help you in any way?
In our particular situation, I did, for some reason, I did not have the ability to get any type of letter from the panda specialist at the time. I can't remember why. And I got lucky and had a fairly admin staff at the school that were relatively understanding, a school nurse that already knew what pandas was. It's, you know, being able to say she's diagnosed with it and all of that was beneficial. But for us, it didn't super change the experience that we had at school. I know that for some, it does help quite a bit as far as getting 504s and IEPs and stuff like that. But we got really lucky and were met with some understanding, good humans.
Yeah. And as of the time of this recording, there's not actually an official pandas diagnosis unless I missed an update someplace. And I can't imagine that I would have missed that. So even if you get a quote unquote diagnosis, a clinical diagnosis of pandas or PANS, there's not like an ICD-10 code that will say you have pandas or you have PANS. We have to use sort of like an other autoimmune condition diagnostic code. And so it's still, even getting a diagnosis doesn't actually technically get you a diagnosis because it's still relatively new. Like in the world of medicine, we are always 20 plus years behind the research. And we're right now, we're at 24 years since this was first defined. So we're just starting to get caught up more with this. And so I'm hopeful that this will be a very dated podcast in the very near future, and that there will actually be a lot more coverage and codes and acceptance of this. So let's shift gears a little bit and talk about some of the misdiagnoses that were suggested to you and some of the things that I see come in to our practice that people have been incorrectly diagnosed with.
Tourette's mm-hmm. was one of them. There were quite a few, just general behavioral, I don't think a behavioral disorder, but it was constantly, whenever she got to the point where she was having more kind of psychiatric in nature symptoms, it was suggested that she had anxiety, that she had depression, that she had ADHD. I'm trying to remember what else. I think the one that was the hardest for me was whenever we got really to the end where I realized that it was, you know, we were at the end of our treatment road in the realm that we were in, and it was time to move on, was going back to one of those providers and being told that, you know, basically that I needed to settle into the idea that Avery was going to be diagnosed with ASD, and that's how she was going to live the rest of her life, and that I needed to accept that we were going to have to medicate her for the psychiatric symptoms that she was having. And that was like, part of me was like, okay, like there are a lot of things that are going on with Avery right now that could potentially look like autism. It also looks like she's in this like mental health world all of the sudden. So those things make sense, but it is not my child. It was not my child 6-8 months ago. It was just that wasn't it for me. That wasn't where we were going to settle. We were going back to the beginning somehow. I didn't know how, but it, that just wasn't Avery at all.
We see that quite a lot where there are kiddos who get diagnosed with being on the autism spectrum that it turns out that it was really PANS all along. There is an overlap though. I will say that there are people who have comorbidities which means that they have two conditions at the same time, and that they do have legitimate autism spectrum disorder. And they also have PANS. And the way that the conditions are managed is a little bit different, and the outcomes are a little bit different, or the trajectory. And we'll talk about those in future episodes, but they can both be addressed using homeopathy. And a lot of the things that are used, even in the conventional and functional realm, are going to be kind of similar to what they do. It's just in homeopathy, it's a little bit different with how we manage it. But like I said, we'll talk about that in a future episode. some of the things I have seen come in, I can't tell you how many kids that before I shifted and accepted the PANS wave that was coming to me and became a hyper specialist, did homeopathy for PANS, and I had a more general mental health practice. I saw so many kids who had pediatric bipolar disorder that wasn't pediatric bipolar disorder, that was PANS. Same thing with Tourette's. People would come to me and they'd get the diagnosis of Tourette's. And one of the differences that I think is important to point out between Tourette's and PANS is that Tourette's tends to start with simple tics and progress over time. PANS starts with like explosion of complex tics. So simple tics are like milliseconds. It's like you might miss it if you weren't the parent and looking for it. Whereas the tics that will typically start in PANS or PANDAS come on and they're multiple movements that take seconds to complete. And they're a lot more pronounced and noticeable. That said, they also can sometimes be hidden. And Jodi will probably tell you about that as we go through some more about the specific treatments and the times that she had big spikes in symptoms that she would then try to hide as a result of some of the medications that she was being given to hopefully treat the condition. So Tourette's is a big one, autism spectrum, pediatric bipolar disorder, oppositional defiant disorder, OCD. I mean, we can even see this in adults too, yeah. Where, you know, we can get these diagnoses like myself, that I ended up with a diagnosis of bipolar disorder that I, at this point, don't think is correct because of just how I've responded and my overall total history that wasn't taken into consideration because somebody was looking at this brief moment of time. All right. Is there anything else that we should really touch on when it comes to the actual logistics of getting a diagnosis? I guess probably the most important thing is that, like, don't expect to get a diagnosis from any doctor. And I think Jodi has made that point pretty clearly, but it still is worth saying that you really are only going to get a diagnosis because it is a clinical diagnosis from somebody who understands the condition and understands the information behind it. For those who are wanting to give any of your providers resources to learn, or you've got somebody who's open to it but doesn't understand it, a good resource for them is the PANDAS Physicians Network. And so they actually have a really fantastic algorithm that a conventional provider or any provider for that matter can follow to help with both like the symptoms that are needing to be present and testing that can be done to help rule out whether it's PANS or PANDAS or something else entirely. And so that's a really great resource to share with people if they want to learn more, specifically with your healthcare providers, if they want to learn more about PANS or PANDAS or need help navigating how to get to a diagnosis for you.
I think one of the most important things, just because I've seen the shift from whenever we went through it with Avery, which has been a while back, to now, is, you know, going back to getting connected with your local groups, because there are providers out there that are treating PANS and PANDAS right now. Going directly to one of them, as opposed to going through all of the people that you don't know, I think it's just super important to save yourself time and just go directly.
Maybe to save you time, because some of them are booked out quite a long ways and don't always take insurance. And so it's not always available. So if it's available to you to go to a provider who already understands PANS or PANDAS, and you can find providers who are familiar with it on that, the PANDAS Physicians Network, and then also pandasnetwork.org. There's several other organizations that have trusted providers that know about PANS and PANDAS at the very least, that you could go and work with. That said, I'm surprised, Jodi, because I'm the one who's going to call out the advocacy here component, and it's normally you who is like doing the advocacy part. So the more you talk to every provider along the way and give them resources to learn more about it, the faster people are going to be able to get a diagnosis, and they're not going to have to do GoFundMe campaigns to be able to raise the funds to spend the money to get to a provider who understands it, or sometimes wait months on end to get to someplace to just get started, while in the meantime, you're potentially being paralyzed by your child's symptoms and maybe even harmed by your child's symptoms, because sometimes they can get quite violent when they're in a bad flare. So
yes, I drive my husband nuts because he's like, I can't go to any doctor with you because you are like everywhere we go, there's like little nuggets being dropped about, you know, something going in each provider that we were going to that had the opportunity to watch Avery heal is now has a little bit different mindset about what, and some of them have a significantly different mindset about it. And that was all like, you know, giving them little bitty pieces of, you know, her story and what was going on and taking pamphlets with me into like, if you don't want to listen to me, I'm just going to leave this here. And, you know, having some of those providers reach out to me and ask questions and, you know, say like, this is not something that I was taught about. But can I ask you a couple of questions about it? So people are listening, even if it doesn't feel like it.
And, you know, that's one of the things that I want to encourage you as a listener, if you are in the early stages of exploring this, or if you're a provider who maybe is in the early stages of exploring this, somebody telling you they don't know what they're wanting to learn is the biggest gift that you can give to somebody or that you can receive from a provider. Because if somebody doesn't know what they're willing to learn, that is a huge opportunity. That's how I got to get to this point where I have some fairly substantial expertise in PANS and PANDAS was because I was willing to listen and I was willing to learn from parents. And I learned as much or more from parents than I did from any continuing medical education that I've ever done. And so providers, that's a really fantastic gift that you can give is saying, I don't know, but I'm willing to learn. What can you teach me? Do you have resources? And parents, I'm going to encourage you to not see that as a weakness in a provider, but a huge strength in a provider when they can tell you what they don't know, but have openness to receiving information. Because if we have that growth mindset, if we have that willingness to learn, we can really accomplish great things together. Yep. All right. Well, I think we'll wrap on this episode for today. In our next episode, we are going to talk more about some of the specifics with treatment, and we'll start where most people start, which is with a conventional treatment. And so we'll go through what Jody's experience has been with Avery, and I can go through some of the common recommendations that are made as well. And so we'll see you guys there.
Bye.